Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. President Donald Trump incited a violent attack against the government of the people of the United States yesterday. Insurrectionist rioters stormed the Capitol building. Few were arrested. Inside, they desecrated the American flag, taking down the stars and stripes and raising a Trump banner. They paraded the Confederate flag through the halls of Congress.
This is our country. This is our house. They work for us. They don't get to steal it from us.
This was a fraudulent election, but we can't play into the hands of these people. We have to have peace. So go home. We love you. You're very special.
Threatening the safety of duly elected officials. It's not protest. It's insurrection.
But still, a direct physical attack on one of the central democratic institutions of the United States did not deter half a dozen Republican senators and more than 100 Republican members of the House from sustaining their attack on America's trust in the electoral system. They voted to challenge electors from two states, citing allegations of fraud for which they have never had evidence that could withstand the scrutiny of an American court. So where does that leave the Republican Party? Where does that leave this country's democracy? We'll begin today with Congressman Raul Ruiz. He's a Democratic representative for California's 36th Congressional District. He is the chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. He was at the Capitol yesterday. Congressman, welcome.
Thank you.
I understand you were one of the last people to be cleared from the House chamber.
I was. I was on the top gallery. The people that were on the House floor were evacuated first, and then there were some setbacks, so they held us up in the gallery until they were able to clear a path for our evacuation.
And where did you go?
Well, we stayed up in the gallery. We were instructed to start thinking how we would find cover in case the protesters came in. I started talking to other members about the drill for a mass shooter. First, you find cover. Two, you run and escape if you think it's safe. And then three, if all else fails, you have to ambush. But we thank God we didn't need to use that, although I did hear a gunshot outside of the House floor. We were able to move into another Capitol building in an undisclosed location where everybody that was in the House and other members were told to go in order for Capitol Police to account for all of us. And that's where we sheltered in place for about 6-7 hours.
And how are you doing now, Congressman?
You know, it's interesting because I'm trained in emergency crisis situations. I'm an emergency physician with pre-hospital disaster training. So training in mass casualty triage is something that I have. And so at that moment, all day yesterday, there were two very straightforward goals. One was to survive and help others stay alive, right? Luckily, nobody got shot. Nobody was at that serious critical position. But I was very focused on that and making sure everybody was calm, that things didn't escalate within the members of Congress. And second, the second priority was to finish what we started. These protesters wanted to interrupt our constitutional responsibility of counting and certifying the Electoral College. And so we were determined not to allow that to happen. So I stayed in the House on the House floor after the incident all through the night until 4 a.m. And it was beautiful to hear Vice President Pence read out the Electoral College and clearly and unmistakably show that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris won the Electoral College, and they will be the next president and vice president of the United States of America. And that's important, not only for me personally as an individual to show that that nobody will keep me from fulfilling my oath of office and upholding the Constitution, but it's important for our nation to show that the backbone of our democracy, which is our Constitution, was still fulfilled, that we weren't deterred. And it's important for us to show the world that our democracy is stronger than any act of violence, and that the American people have spoken, and that we have been tested, and we came through in fulfilling our fundamental principle of a government of the people, by the people, for the people, because the people decide who our leaders are.
Well, that indeed did happen. That gavel was pounded just before 4 a.m., right? And you're exactly right. It was... We should celebrate that the work of democracy was done. But before that, when you and other members of the House returned back to the floor, as mentioned, we had more than 100 members, Republican House members, who continued to challenge the results. I mean, for example, here's what Republican Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida said after the attack on Congress when representatives returned to the floor last night.
Some pretty compelling evidence from a facial recognition company showing that some of the people who breached the Capitol today were not Trump supporters. They were masquerading as Trump supporters and, in fact, were members of the violent terrorist group Antifa. Now, we should seek to build America up, not tear her down and destroy her. And I am sure glad that at least for one day, I didn't hear my Democrat colleagues calling to defund the police.
So Congressman Gaetz there at the beginning of that clip, bringing factless conspiracy theories to the floor of the House right after the attack on Congress. Congressman Ruiz, how did you respond to that?
I was sick. It made me nauseous. I was disgusted. It was unbelievable that after we had experienced what we had experienced, which was a real threat to our safety and our lives, that the possibility mass shooter could have broken through those doors and killed so many Democratic and Republican lawmakers and staff, and then he comes in with his shenanigans for theater in order to make himself a social media star in the midst of his, you know, of the radical right, was absolutely shameful and disgusting. As you mentioned, there is no factual basis to what he said. In fact, you know, I would like to know concretely which face recognition company had the time and the means to go in there in such a short period of time to identify and then investigate if that person had really been in some other organization. Mm. I mean, our FBI hasn't even done that yet. So right. This is the problem with conspiracy theories. This is the problem with President Trump accusations of massive fraud and cheating, that they present suspicion to rile the emotion. And if individuals hear it from their social media feeds, if they hear it from their Fox News, if they hear it from their political sensational leaders manipulating people's emotions, then they're going to believe it.
Yeah,
and it's an echo chamber within them.
Forgive me for interrupting. I just have a very limited time for you. I have one more question. I mean, speaking of President Trump, he incited what happened yesterday. He still has 13 more days left in his presidency. Do you think he should remain president until January 20th?
Well, I don't think he should remain president. But, you know, we have the Constitution, and the quickest way that we can get him out of there is if Vice President Pence institutes the 25th Amendment. That's the first thing. That's the quickest way, because any other way will take multiple hearings, both on the House and the Senate, and votes. And we only have 13 days left. So the first thing is to really, really urge the Vice President Pence to initiate the 25th Amendment. Now, many are skeptical that Vice President, who has followed President Trump and his record throughout his tenure will not do that. So the second thing we need to do is we need to send a clear message to the secretaries in his cabinets, to the leaders who have responsibility within DOJ, within the Pentagon and others, that this president is a defunct president, that they should act in a responsible way, filter any reckless decisions and orders that the president has done, and know that we will forgive if they refuse to comply with any dangerous orders or directives that the president has done.
Representative Ruiz, I'm so sorry to interrupt there. Your cell phone line, unfortunately, is really breaking down on us, so I'm going to have to wrap it up with you there. That's Representative Raul Ruiz, chairman of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Representative, thank you so much for joining us. Now, let's listen to a little bit from Congressman Adam Kinzinger, Republican from Illinois, who spoke to NBC yesterday while in lockdown in an undisclosed location in the Capitol building.
I'll tell you, this is madness. And anybody that calls themselves a Republican, like myself, should be very ashamed right now. And I don't know if this has ever happened in history. It's disgusting. And this is not how democracies and how politics works.
Matt Fuller joins us now. He's congressional reporter for HuffPost. He was in the Capitol yesterday. Matt, welcome to On Point. We've just got a minute before we have to take our first break. First of all, I'm so glad you're okay. How are you doing today?
I'm all right. A little tired still, but I think everyone's thankful to be safe and kind of put that day behind us.
Yeah, so we've got 30 seconds before that first break. You want to just tell us a little bit about where you were?
Well, I was in the Capitol. I was in the gallery, the House gallery, when this sort of lockdown started. My experience is actually going to be very similar to Congressman Ruiz's. I was also added into that undisclosed location and actually saw him talking to members, urging them to drink water and whatnot. He just kind of went around and was quietly doing that. But I saw the whole thing from the House side and the gallery there and moving us through the Capitol as fast as they could.
Okay, well, we'll come back to you in just a minute here after we take this first break. We're talking about the insurrection at the Capitol building of the United States yesterday and what that means for this country going forward. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and here is a moment from President Trump's rally yesterday before the insurrection in the Capitol. Here he is inciting his supporters.
After this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down. We're going to walk down. Anyone you want, but I think right here we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them. Because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
And in fact, that language of taking back the country was exactly what some of the members of the mob said once they had broken into the Capitol. A little later in the day, here's President-elect Joe Biden addressing the nation as the chaos unfolded.
Let me be very clear. The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. What we're seeing are a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition, and it must end now.
Matt Fuller, did it seem like a small number of extremists? You were in the building.
certainly not. I mean, this was, you know, to say this is a mob, an angry mob, that's exactly what it was. And I think the mob mentality had sort of taken over. Just the images, I guess, we saw just of people swarming the halls and swarming the Capitol, breaking through windows, climbing through windows, ransacking offices. I mean, this was not, a peaceful protest. These people didn't come holding candles. This was, the Gadsden flag and flagpoles, and they were ready for battle. I mean, I think that's the fairest way to say it. And what President Trump was trying to do, he accomplished. I mean, he incited this violence, and certainly people felt empowered to go and, basically just take back their capital. And they didn't care about the rule of law or the history, or that the last time that had happened was in 1814 when the British did it. Hmm. This was just an amazing day. It's something like I've never seen anything like it on Capitol Hill. And I hope to never see anything like it again.
I'll be honest. It was sickening to see the flag of the Confederacy being paraded around the halls of the United States Congress. That didn't even happen during the Civil War.
Right, something that's never happened. And, we've had a lot of, I guess, flag flaps over the years about the Confederate flag and the state of Mississippi's flag sort of bearing those images a little bit. But, yeah, you're right. It never even happened during the Civil War. And it's a sad day that it happened yesterday.
So listen, Matt, you've been following Congress and reporting on Congress for quite some time now.
Yeah, a decade.
Look, I hope that we have you back again and again over the next several weeks, because there's no way we're going to get to everything in just one hour. So let me just ask you one more question before I let you go. I was going to say to get some much needed rest, but I imagine you're not going to be able to rest much in the next many days. But how do you make sense of what happened yesterday? How are you thinking through this?
You know, I think really it's the logical conclusion, the natural ending of the Trump presidency. I think Republicans have been lied to for so many years. The rhetoric has just, it's been overheated for way too long. And, it's cloaked in this idea of patriotism and that taking back our country, like I said, but it's so far removed from that. I mean, the idea that what you're doing is patriotic when you're, breaking windows, breaking into the Capitol and ransacking the place, this isn't patriotism. And it's just, it's really sad to see. And, it's frankly due in large part because we have a president who continues to reject the idea that he lost the election. He refuses to believe that. And his followers refuse to believe that. So we've just created an alternate reality. And a lot of that is due in large part to the Republicans on Capitol Hill, who yesterday voted to basically undo the election, to undo the votes of millions of Americans, even after this violent attack on the Capitol.
Well, Matt Fuller is congressional reporter for HuffPost. Matt, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Well, folks, we do want to hear how you're feeling about this. Here's the number to call to leave us a message. It's 617-353-0683. We've already received a lot of messages from listeners across the country. Here's Dana Lehman from Sherborne, Massachusetts, saying how disturbed she was by the president's messages to the mob.
I'm particularly distressed by the president being able to go onto Twitter, onto social media, and speak directly to the mob and essentially affirm what they've done, affirm that this was a stolen election, that the democratic process was totally broken down, and that this was not a lawful election, and that he could tell them how special they are and he loves them.
Here's Jean from Kingsport, Tennessee.
Legal protest and challenge of election results are one thing. Violent invasion of the Capitol and preventing our congressional representatives from doing their constitutionally mandated duties as far as validating the election and the electoral college vote is not.
And here's David, Republican from Austin, Texas.
My brother did not fight in Afghanistan and die for some person, I don't care who they are, to try to steal a fair election. That goes against everything that we believe in, everything we've ever fought for in this country. Makes me think that I don't know who I am anymore.
Again, we want to know what you think. 617-353-0683. I'm joined now by Tim Snyder. He's a professor of history at Yale University, author of many books, including The Road to Unfreedom, Russia, Europe, and America, and On Tyranny, 20 Lessons from the 20th Century. Tim Snyder, welcome back to On Point.
Glad to be with you.
Jennifer Horn also joins us now. She's co-founder of the Lincoln Project. Last month, she announced her departure from the Republican Party. She's now a registered independent. She served prior to that, though, as chairperson of the New Hampshire Republican Party from 2013 to 2017. Jennifer Horn, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Jennifer, let me first ask you, what is the state of your former party right now?
Well, it's obviously in dangerous disarray. That we have one of the two major parties in the United States of America embracing essentially an attempted coup. And make no mistake, these 13 Republican senators who engaged in a coordinated effort to overturn the Electoral College yesterday, they were engaging in seditious behavior. And they are leaders of the Republican Party, and they must be held accountable. And we have to call them what they are and be really honest with ourselves in this moment. The Republican Party and their elected leaders dragged our country to a constitutional precipice yesterday. They are responsible. It's not just this crazy, unstable, dangerous president. It is the party that has empowered and enabled and supported him along the way.
Well, Tim Snyder, there's a lot of talk now that failed coups are sometimes or perhaps even often followed by successful ones. To Jennifer's point about there must be some accountability, what form should that accountability take?
Well, first of all, the point that a failed coup is a warning is a very important one. No matter how this turns out, we should remember how close it came and think of all the things that can be done to make sure we never get this close again. And one of them, as you suggest, is being able to name names. So Trump's big lie was there in order to keep him in power. Once that fails, his big lie will be carried on by the senators who we mentioned, above all, Senator Hawley and Senator Cruz. They are attempting to set a precedent by which one can become president of the United States without winning an election. It's very important that we understand that a coup is a cooperative effort. The people who take part in it are coup plotters. The people who took part in this coup should be remembered as coup plotters. They should have no political future in this country.
Well, let's listen to what Republican Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri said after the attack on Congress and after the Senate reconvened last night. Here he is in the discussion of his objection to certifying the electors from certain states.
Our Constitution was built and put into place so that there would be, in the words of Abraham Lincoln, no appeal from ballots to bullets, which is what we saw unfortunately attempted tonight. There is no place for that in the United States of America. And that's why I submit to my colleagues that what we're doing here tonight is actually very important. Because for those who have concerns about the integrity of our elections, those who have concerns about what happened in November, this is the appropriate means. This is the lawful place where those objections and concerns should be heard.
Jennifer Horn, respond to that.
Listen, there's no question that these men yesterday in the Senate, these Republican senators, they knew what they were doing. They were fully informed. They are fully engaged. Josh Hawley, Ted Cruz, Kennedy, you know, the whole list of them, there were six of them in the end, who remained committed to this. The professor is absolutely right. This was an attempted coup, not an attempted coup just by the mobs outside breaking into the Capitol, but an attempt by elected representatives of the people to overturn a legitimate government, a legitimately elected president of what is supposed to be the freest nation on earth. I know I'm going back to what I said a minute ago. There has to be accountability. These senators cannot be allowed access to any other office, to any greater power. And personally, I'm of the belief that there is historic precedent and constitutional structure that allows these people to be expelled from the Senate. If there was truly character and integrity in any of the remaining Republican senators, that's what the next step would be. Just like the 10 senators who were expelled in 1861 in the opening days of the Civil War, they were expelled for conspiring against their government. Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and the others fall in that same category.
Jennifer, would expulsion be enough to prevent Hawley and Cruz from running again or perhaps even for higher office?
Probably not enough to keep them from running. I'm not a constitutional expert. I don't believe it would block them from running, but I think it would send a very loud, public, strong, expansive message that this is not something that we tolerate under our Constitution. It's not something that is allowed to go, in this America. And that's been such a big part of this problem for the last 4 years, is that everything that Donald Trump does, there are some of us who come out here and say, this is wrong, this is unconstitutional, this is unfounded, but there is no consequence, nothing happens. And so it's not just that it continues, but the American people become kind of immune to it. They start to accept it. It's that drip, 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 the Chinese water torture, drip, drip, drip of constitutional offenses. There has to be something other than, gee, these guys really shouldn't have done that when this is all said and done.
Yeah.
There has to be some strong consequence for this action, or this will become just the seedling of some future attempt.
Tim Snyder, in listening to that cut from Josh Hawley, it makes me think Donald Trump was the wrecking ball, right, of American democratic norms. But it was also rather easy to see what he was doing because of his rhetorical style, right, in part, and the brazenness with which he just destroyed norms in this country. But when I listen to Josh Hawley, I hear a rhetorical sophistication that America's next autocrat might use, right? Smarter, smoother, maybe a little harder to pin down. I mean, is that a concern?
I think what it means is that we have to be all the clearer in the language that we use. From 2015 forward, far too many commentators were too afraid to characterize Donald Trump for what he always was from the beginning, which is someone seeking office who opposed democracy. With Josh Hawley, we have the same thing. Now we have a second try. And we should now be ready with the concepts we should have been ready with the last time. One concept I would put on the table for this smooth-talking young man is the concept of fascism. When you have people who are clearly fascists, that is, right-wing extremists and terrorists, from the Proud Boys, from the Three Percenters, from right-wing organizations who carry out, under the call of the President of the United States, an attack against democracy. And when all of this takes place under the cover of a big lie, then we are in fascist territory. If U.S. senators or anyone else supports this, they should be prepared to be called names that match the stature, the horrible stature of the things that they've done.
Well, I mean, Josh Hawley even fist pumped on his way into the Senate yesterday to those very protesters. Here's a completely different voice that we heard in response to exactly this issue, Tim Snyder. Senator Elizabeth Warren, here's what she said yesterday.
This effort to subvert our democracy is not merely one last presidential tantrum. This effort is designed to knock out the basic pillar on which democracy is founded, the idea that the voters, not the sitting president and not the members of Congress, but the voters decide who will lead this nation. A democracy in which the elected leaders do not bend to the will of the voters is no democracy. It is a totalitarian state.
Senator Elizabeth Warren last night after the insurrection at the Capitol. I'm joined today by Tim Snyder, historian and professor at Yale University. Jennifer Horn is also with us. She's co-founder of the Lincoln Project, former chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party. We'll be back. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about yesterday's historic attack on American democracy, about the insurrectionist mob that broke into the U.S. Capitol and what it means for the future of this country. I'm joined today by Jennifer Horn and Tim Snyder. And Jennifer and Tim, I'm hoping you can listen along for a little bit because we have to talk about the policing response or even lack of response that we saw yesterday. Many listeners called our call-in number, which is 617-353-0683, to talk about the discrepancy they saw about doors being held open for or selfies even being taken by some members of the Capitol Police with the insurrectionist mob. For example, here's what Jessica from Massachusetts had to say.
What we saw today proves that policing only serves to protect white and otherwise privileged members of our society. We see the Capitol law enforcement officers taking selfies with the Trump supporters. We see them essentially allowing these people to go in. And as we know, this is not the treatment that Black Americans, other people of color, Indigenous people in America receive.
In fact, only 52 people thus far have been arrested. And as people, those insurrectionist mobs were cleared from the Capitol, the doors were held open for them to just walk out. Here's what Larry Frazier from Chicago said about that.
As a Black man, that seeing what happened over the summer with Black citizens of Chicago retroactively being arrested for their rioting, I definitely would need to see these white insurrectionists retroactively held accountable for the things that they've done. A big double standard in this country. And it's becoming very glaring as a person of color and to all minorities.
Well, joining us now is Kwame Rose, social activist, artist, and organizer in Baltimore, Maryland. Kwame, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
What did you see yesterday?
Well, what I saw was the fruition of a plan that had been put in place long before yesterday. What we saw on national television is what Donald Trump has been talking about for the past 4 years. We saw him incite a violent mob that was geared towards quieting the voices of minorities. Because let's be clear, when they say
Kwame, I'm just going to jump in here for a second. What you're saying is too important. It's very, very important. And the line just keeps going up and down. I can only really hear every third word. So I'm going to give our control room a chance to maybe get you back on a better line. So we will hear from you again. I just want to be able to hear what you're saying, okay? So we'll work on that because it's really important. Tim Snyder, let me turn to you then. To explore with us a little bit more about the failure of policing here, and just respond to, I mean, the national discussion has been full of this instantaneous reaction about how different law enforcement behaved, or differently it behaved yesterday than it has in the Black Lives Matter protests that we saw across the country in the summer.
Look, the problems with our country's democracy are deeply about race. The entire big lie about fraud is about race. It's a claim that Black people in Detroit and Philadelphia and Atlanta, that they shouldn't vote or their vote shouldn't count. When Ted Cruz invokes 1877 and the compromise of that year, what he's invoking is the moment in American history where we created apartheid across the South. When our capital is invaded, it's invaded by white supremacists. So what the Capitol Police did is part of an essential element of this whole story, which is that we can't get democracy right unless we get the history of race right. People shouldn't talk about fraud and mean Black people shouldn't vote. That's the essence of all of this. And so what the Capitol Police are doing, of course, it's totally inconsistent. But it's just an element of a deeper, deeper problem, which I think is at the essence of all of this.
Well, Kwame Rose, do we have you back now?
Yes, I'm okay. Back. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's not your fault at all. The technology is what it is these days. So I do want to hear from you directly about this question. As an activist and as a Black man, what you were thinking as you saw. I mean, there's the videos that are going around on social media of on occasion white members of the Capitol Police allowing selfies to be taken with members of this mob.
Yeah, I'm not shocked. Look, I'm sitting down watching TV, enjoying a drink last night. And I'm watching the TV and I'm saying, look at these white people. Listen, this is what, I don't care if you are from the Lincoln Project. I don't care if you denounce Trump after this angry mob stormed the Capitol yesterday. This is what you all created. This is what they wanted. And the fact that it happened on national television, the fact that for the first time in American history, the Confederate flag was flown inside of the U.S. Capitol. It lets you know that when they say unfair election, they just mean that Black and brown people voted.
Well, Jennifer Horn, the Lincoln Project, that's you. Respond to, I mean, Kwame is giving the deeper history here of the Republican Party over the past 40 years. Your response to that?
There's no question that we are confronting an ugly history of systemic racism that continues to this moment. There is no question that if that was a crowd of Black Lives Matter protesters coming toward the Capitol yesterday, they would have been treated very, very differently. And he's absolutely correct that, the votes that these Republican senators and this Republican president are trying to invalidate and overturn are largely votes from people who are minorities in this country. It is a fact that cannot be denied, and it is a fact that has largely fed this president's presidency. The Republican Party has failed spectacularly in confronting the consequences of racism in this country for a very long time. But what is most dangerous is, in my opinion, the most dangerous thing that we have seen from them in this is their obvious, conscious, strategic decision in the wake of the election, after the president had clearly lost the election. The Republican Party has made a clear choice to build the future of the party, embracing the very principles that Abraham Lincoln fought to defeat. They are taking what is the worst about Donald Trump and about our history in this country and trying to build the future of our party on those cornerstones. Mm. It's dangerous. It's wrong. And every good person in this country who considers themselves a Republican, but I'm a good person, a Republican, but I'm not racist, then they need to come forward and become a very active, loud voice to push back on this.
Kwame, we could talk a lot about sort of the party, about elected officials, but the first syllable in democracy is demos, right? It's the people. What would you, for all the people listening right now, what do you want them to know? What do you think that the American people should do to push back against this anti-democratic insurrectionist virus in the body of the country now?
You know, I wouldn't even call what we saw yesterday anti-democratic. This is literally how this country was built. A bunch of angry white folk stormed the land and took over and enacted their ideology. I think what was missing yesterday from the Senate floor was calling this what this was. And this was white privilege, white supremacy, enacting white power. And what folks need to know is that I've been saying this on this show for months now, all last year, that this is on white people. White folks, this was your mom, these were your dads, these were your siblings, your aunts and uncles, these were your neighbors. These were your neighbors. And we watched on television as the police let folks come in. I've been arrested for just standing on a sidewalk using a bullhorn. And out of the 52 arrests yesterday, not one of those arrests was made because somebody participated in a riot inside the nation's capital, which is supposed to be the center of democracy for the world. So what we saw was democracy and the ugly history of America that we refuse to address coming to fruition and be put right on the forefront of everyone's minds.
Keep talking though, Kwame. Tell me more. So you talk to me. Or again, people listening, I hear you. What can someone do who's living in Baltimore, someone who's listening to us in Texas, in Iowa?
I'll give you a perfect example. The Lincoln Project raised tens of millions of dollars, right? What needs to happen is conversations. Donald Trump lost this election, but make no mistake about it, 70-plus million people voted for Donald Trump. That means that more conversations about dismantling white supremacy need to happen. And this isn't just calling out racism for what it is, and that's racism. This is about making sure organizations, even Republicans who are saying, I'm fed up with the party. It's not just about saying I'm fed up because this was racist. It's about participating in the deconstruction of racism and about being anti-racist. You know, we all can play a part on an everyday basis. Yesterday was case in point. Why we say Black Lives Matter and that we don't need policing in black communities, because we saw the reaction. We saw that they failed to use the millions of dollars worth of riot gear that they've been using on protesters in D.C. at the Capitol all last year. In August, I was even pushed by D.C. police participating in a protest. It starts at home. It starts within. It starts on a community level. And it starts with conversations. But then we have to take those conversations forward and we have to turn them into communal efforts and start bringing about tangible change in communities.
Kwame Rose, social activist, artist, and organizer in Baltimore, Maryland. Kwame, thank you so much for coming back on the show again.
No, thank you all for having me.
Let's listen to one more moment from yesterday. Here's Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell giving a speech on the floor of the Senate condemning the attempts by his fellow Republicans to overturn election results or challenge election results from several states. Here he is.
If this election were overturned by mere allegations from the losing side, our democracy would enter a death spiral. We'd never see the whole nation accept an election again.
Tim Snyder, this is a moment I think that demands the bravery of seeing things as they are and calling things as they are, and at the same time, seeing as much of the picture as we can. And with that in mind, I'm thinking back to what Representative Raul Ruiz said to us at the very beginning of this hour when he said, regardless of the insurrection or the attempts even by members of Congress, at 3:45 a.m. Eastern time today, the Electoral College count was certified. Joe Biden was certified as being, he's going to be the next president of the United States. Kamala Harris is going to be the next vice president of the United States. Representative Ruiz looked at that as a sign of the continuing strength of American democracy. Do you see it the same way?
I don't know if it's a sign of continuing strength. I think it's rather an opportunity for us to take a deep look at ourselves. You know, there were things which were going wrong in our government and in that Capitol before the 6th of January. It's a mistake to think that everything was fine until the Capitol was profaned. I think this is an opportunity for us to remember our own history, to see the things that are wrong with our own system, of which racism is a very prominent example. And I think it's an opportunity, as has been said, for the Republican Party to reconsider what it's going to be in the future and to exclude people who stand openly for racism and who stand openly for suppressing the votes of other Americans. I think it's also an opportunity for the Biden-Harris administration. I think they're going to have a chance that they didn't have earlier to try to reset the tone. This is not a moment where we can say the institutions work. It's not a moment where we can say everything turned out in the end and therefore it's fine. It is a moment where we can reconsider and regroup and recognize what's wrong and try to make things much better.
Jennifer Horn, President Trump did release a statement today that began once again with unfounded lies regarding the results of the election, but then ended by saying there will be an orderly transition of power on January 20th. The order has already been destroyed. I mean, that we saw the destruction of order yesterday. Do you think that President Trump should remain president until January 20th?
No, absolutely not. Unfortunately, me thinking that doesn't effectuate any actual change in that. The people who have the authority, the constitutional ability to protect the country from what the potential of the next 13 or 14 days don't appear to have the will to take the necessary action right now. That statement from the president that came out this morning, people should understand, was given under great duress. It was given because people in his administration were starting to resign, to walk away as a result of what happened yesterday. And his willingness to give it, frankly, I think was probably influenced in large part by the fact that he got what he wanted yesterday. No one should forget or have any misunderstanding about why this happened yesterday, because the president of the United States wanted this to happen. He lit the match. He stood at the microphone and said, let's go. We're going to march down Pennsylvania Avenue. There was no chance he was actually going to march down Pennsylvania Avenue with them. But this is what he wanted. He went to bed last night and slept soundly in the knowledge that he was able to turn out his army of the aggrieved to actually do battle for him against the people that he felt had offended him in some way. It's dangerous. It is an assault on democracy. And everyone who shares the goal of preserving democracy, no matter what our differences are, need to come together to fight this going forward.
Jennifer Horn, co-founder of the Lincoln Project, former chair of the New Hampshire Republican Party, now an independent. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
And Tim Snyder, professor of history at Yale University and author of many books, including On Tyranny. Professor Snyder, thank you as always.
Pleasure.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.